Welcome to this week's edition of Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. Each week, I'll be discussing different issues and different ideas with entrepreneurs from Malta and overseas to help you change or start your own business. Welcome to this week's Interviews with Entrepreneurs. And this week, I feel so lucky. I've got Gabriella Lukacs with me. And you have a brand called Gabe, which are the most beautiful handbags.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. It's a very, very big honor. Yes, I do have. This is my passion. Mm-hmm. This is my love, what I love to do the most. And Gabe is famous for sustainability.
Okay.
Sustainable fashion, which does not mean that I am only using sustainable materials, but what I'm focusing on is upcycling materials.
Okay.
So what I'm actually doing is I'm trying to find companies who have leftovers or dead stock or however you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I collect those materials, including leather, textiles, different materials.
So anything even from furniture shops, curtain shops, anything
exactly.
like that?
Exactly. To be honest, at the moment I have ateliers and leather workshops I'm collaborating at this moment. And yes, I'm using those leftovers and I'm trying to recreate them to new products. And what I'm using, what I'm focusing on to use the best quality out of these remnants. But we are focusing on creating a quality, creating something exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we want to educate people on this sustainability subject, because I think it's highly misunderstood by a great many people, because people are not really aware what is it all about and how difficult it is to find the right materials and so on and so on. And I think it's also very important to educate people about what we can use. I mean, we have so much left over of whatever, not necessarily leathers and fabrics, but plastic, whatever it is. People who have talent, I think we should support them, because we must be aware that we have a lot of rubbish around what we can actually use and upcycle. And I think it's a very important subject in our time.
So a lot of these companies would otherwise literally be throwing these remnants, these scraps of fabric essentially, into the bin.
Yes, and the reason why, because they simply don't have the space to store them when they have a lot of them, or they don't have the people, the knowledge or mm-hmm. whatever source to really use them. So after the huge amount of the products are created, nobody thinks about the leftovers. They are just discarded and sent to the landfills.
And
basically,
you were saying about ateliers, whatever, they have fashion. So if the line is finished, they no longer want to use that.
Exactly.
Whereas a bag lives for longer.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. you don't change bag every season necessarily. You have your favorite bag to go with this coat or
exactly.
this season, but you don't change bag.
Yeah.
You don't throw it away because it's mm-hmm. no longer Christmas. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Okay. So how did you get started doing this? How did you stumble across
Gabe? I used to work in a film industry for more than 16 years. And actually, I wanted to find something, a kind of an escape to recharge my batteries. Mm-hmm. And I started to go to a course. It was an art course, and I started to be interested in designing things. I wasn't sure what exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, okay, let's just do a kind of fashion designer course. But the reason why I was specialized in bags and accessories, it was not in the school. I was finishing as a proper fashion designer, so to say. But because I couldn't find a really, really nice bag for myself, I started to make bags for myself and only for myself in the beginning.
Okay.
And people just started to buy them from me because it's, oh, it's such a lovely bag. Oh, I want one like this, da, da, da. And this is how it started. I kept it as a hobby for a very long time because I was very busy with the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was working on a Hollywood movie or, you know, big project, mm-hmm. I was in a studio for 8 months, 12 months, 5 months. It depended on the project. So I didn't really have the time to, you know, work on a collection, do the things, source the materials, blah, blah, blah. So it took me for a while. But then the more, very early on, I started to focus on the leftover materials. The more the special bags or designs, ideas I came up with, the more interest I got from the people. And because I started it in Budapest, Hungary, because I am Hungarian, mm-hmm. in Hungary, art and sustainability and, you know, a one-off special item is so precious for the people, then they tend to pay even more because, you know, they want to support these things.
And so it's very losses,
yeah. It's very popular in Hungary, and it was back then as well. I started in 2009, so obviously the more people ordered, I thought, oh, it would be a great thing, you know, to do it as a profession. And although I loved my original profession and I love to do movies, it is a very demanding industry. It was very tiring. And I was already started to think about how could I switch to something else. And when I saw the interest of the people, I thought, wow, this really could be something that could work out for me.
So what did you do in the film industry, just to see if it has any correlation at all?
I started as a producer assistant.
Okay.
And then I became a casting director because I started to specialize into casting.
Uh-huh. So now you can see what somebody would look like with your bag in their hand.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So any experience you have actually works, I think.
Absolutely.
And what about costume in film? You never felt like going into that direction?
Yes, I did. In the very beginning, I did. But when I saw the amount of work, the mm-hmm. pressure you have, that it's not really only about your creativity, but it's about, you know, the guideline of the director, which is fine. I'm fine with it. I think I'm very good with following briefs, so that's not a problem for me. But the pressure of this industry that you have to be ready by time and so on, so I don't think it's for me.
Right.
And I thought, it's not something I should do.
So when did you move to Malta?
Well, that was an accident, because Malta, to be very honest, was never on my map, in the sense that I always wanted to come to visit, but I never really had a reason. And I thought, oh, it's so close to Hungary, yeah, one day I will go. But I never really had a reason to come, uh-huh. except holidays. But two of my friends moved to Malta, and they started to beg me saying, come to visit us, it's so beautiful, you must come to visit us. And I said, okay, I finished this movie, and I promise I will come. And when I promise, it's a promise. Oh. So I finished the movie, and I came over. But to be very honest, by then, it was a very serious plan that I would like to look for a place nearby the sea. It must be by the sea. It was a very, very important definition. Where I would love to live, I'd like to, you know, establish myself again. And yes, I want to do the bags. So when I came here, I don't know why, something just, it felt like home, mm-hmm. and I thought, wow, this is the place, and it probably will take some time, but let's take it as the next challenge. And to be honest, I was booked for the next movie. It was Ridley Scott's Blade Runner. And because I have the ticket to Malta, I said no. And I came to Malta because I thought if I don't say no, if I you know, just stay again, there will be always the next movie
of
and
course,
the next, and
yes.
you will never stop. And I thought, I have the ticket, I have my friends waiting for me, and it just, you know, just let's go for it. And
so did you find your place by the sea?
Yes, I did. Actually, I'm not living by the sea in the sense that we are living in Mostar, but yes, the island in itself,
Close enough,
everything is by the sea in Malta, so it's, yeah, absolutely. For me, Malta actually is the perfect location because of many things.
So tell us a few about those. Do you get some inspiration, or is it the size of the island where you can mm-hmm. physically go and get materials? What are the best things about setting up your business here?
A little bit of both, but I think mainly, I think the connection with the people, mostly. I love the weather, obviously. I love the sea. In terms of inspiration, because I am an artist, everything inspires me. So I don't need to go to a particular place to be inspired. I'm very lucky. I have trillions of ideas. I never run out of ideas. I'm not someone who's, you know, thinking at home what to do, or, you know, I'm not inspired. It never happens to me. I'm always inspired. So that's very good. But yes, nature. Mm-hmm. Nature inspires me all the time, wherever I am. People inspires me a lot.
And did it change between the audience that you had in Budapest and the audience you have in Malta? Are the people different here? Do we live differently so that you need to develop a different type of bag? What differences did you find in the cultures?
Yes, it differs a lot. Budapest has a different weather, so it does affect what you design, especially for the autumn winter season. The culture is completely different, so yes, you do need different type of bags. But some things are the same. I mean, classics always works. Wherever you go, you know, it's the, and I am a very, I think, a very classical person in a lot of sense. So yes.
So is it things like you were saying about the weather makes a difference? You know, in Malta, we generally don't need to wear a coat, but in Budapest, I guess you always have to have a coat and maybe have an extra scarf in your bag.
Exactly.
So that makes the design difference.
Yeah.
It has to be a bigger bag.
It affects the size of the bag first and foremost because you carry so much more stuff with you. Colors, obviously, because when it rains heavily or we have snow or a lot of things.
Snow.
Yeah.
I love snow.
Yeah, me too. then you know, you have to think about that. A leather bag not necessarily always works, but it's a huge help, of course. It's very durable. If it is something that you will wash regularly due to the weather, then the material has to be much stronger. Cannot just be something light. So it's different. But in Malta, for instance, you have the challenge of the sun, that you know, a lot of materials are losing its beautiful color because of the fact that the sun is so strong, and when you wash them regularly, it's you know,
kills them.
It does, it definitely does.
And so you got here, you found your friends, you found your place to live, you gave up the film industry.
Well, it's not exactly. I didn't give it up in the beginning. I was flying back and forth between Budapest and Malta because I was obviously scheduled for the movies, time to time. Not to movies, to be precise, commercials. I still said yes to smaller projects. So I spent like a month, a few weeks away, and then I came back. But then I realized that it takes away so much time. It tires me out a lot. So I was looking for something here in Malta, so I had a full-time job for more than a year. Then I flew back again because I was working on a very interesting project which I couldn't say no to. So I flew back again for filming for 4 months, and then I decided to take the whole thing more seriously, and I came up with this plan that I need a part-time job so I will have some basic things which stabilize me, so to say.
That makes sense.
But I have to make enough time for the creations, for the events I'm going to meet to people, to promote my project, and so on and so on. And so I'm doing this since last year. So
so if you've just joined us, you've joined me, Monique Chambers, and I'm interviewing Gabriela Lukács.
Lukács
and Gabe. Beautiful handbags.
Thank you.
How do you go, because of the way you work, you have these fabrics, all varieties of it. I guess you don't get reels and reels of the same materials. Do you design the bag before you see the fabric, or you have the fabrics and then you design the bag? How what's your process?
Both. Both. It depends on. I have a book full of drawings which I would love to do one day, but when I receive the fabrics, obviously it inspires me a lot, and you know, sometimes I start something, it will become something completely different. Or just, I don't know, it's just there for weeks and weeks or months and months, and once I just have this brilliant idea and I create something, it's all the time a different thing. It's not like I have a kind of method. Of course, I have patterns for the bags that, which are the most popular, so to say. And I can see which fabric is good to do this, a certain bag, this and that, yes. So yeah, it depends on.
And you actually make all of the bags yourself still? Or?
Yes.
So and that's how I came across you actually, because you crowdfunded your business. So tell us a bit about that process. How did you find out about Czar and what did you have to do to be able, because this is a completely different, this is not handbag making, this is not film production, this is a whole new ball game. How did you proceed with crowdfunding, beating your crowdfunding target, in fact?
I thought that you have to face yourself and you have to face your weakest parts. And let's face it, this is business for me. I'm so much into the artistic part that I never really cared about the business part, which is not very wise when you are an entrepreneur. So what I did, I went for a meeting to Nashar and I found the female entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I have to go in. I didn't have an appointment. I didn't know anyone there. I just knocked on the door and I said, I'm sorry, I need help. This is what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, wow, you are really brave, and this is what one should do. You knock on doors, and you know, Angèle de Giuliano was very, very kind, and she said, just let's sit down, we discuss a little bit, and let's see what we can do. And actually, she suggested me to go to crowdfunding, which I didn't want to do, because I thought it, you know, I should go in a proper way, put together a business plan, and go to banks and here and there. And when she actually mentioned that the crowdfunding platform, which I didn't know about, the crowdfunding platforms has this extra thing that you can actually pre-sell your products.
Yes.
It just rang the bell and I said, oh, I didn't know about that. And I thought, wow, this is a wonderful thing to actually promote my stuff. And I think I was feeling bad about people giving me money. I didn't want to ask anybody's money because, let's face it, you are ashamed and you have a certain shame of why people would give you money.
I think the way we look at it from the university's perspective is it's a proof of concept.
Yes.
So if you think you have a good idea, if people are willing to pay for it, it proves you have a good idea.
Yeah, but all the artists or anybody who ever created something, if it's your product, it's a very intimate thing.
Yes, of course.
And you know, it's very difficult to actually sell your own product. So the way I felt, I just don't want to ask people's money. I don't know why this was the feeling I felt. But the feeling that I give something in return for me, I can only talk about myself. For me, it was a very precious thing. That, oh my God, okay, people help my project, but I can give something in return. It made me feel very good about that. So I thought, okay, let's put together this project the best I possibly can, and let's see how it goes, because then, you know, there is no guarantee that it will work, but that's very liberating as well, to know that maybe your idea is not working. So
that's that proof of concept aspect. It shows you
exactly,
you know,
it is a terribly difficult thing to do. The panic you feel on the second week when the numbers are not moving and just undescribable. But then it's a fantastic feeling when you have the feedback and, you know, people are helping you and they are behind you. And to be honest, I received money for all over the world, because mainly my friends, to be honest. I mean, there were some people, of course, from Malta, from other countries who contributed, but I mean, mainly the people who know your work or maybe already bought from you, they say, okay, I know that this is a good project and I'd like to help this project. So.
And you'd done, like you said, the rewards-based system. So people would give you, I don't know, some money and they would get a key ring.
Yeah, in my case, it started on 10 euros and up to 1,000. The 500 and the 1,000 was actually for corporates. It was for companies.
Okay.
And in between the 10 and the 500, you could choose several things, like whatever, passport covers or a bag designed for you. It depends on.
And so you had to make those items based on. So it's again a sort of manufacturing in time.
Yeah, of course.
As well as still creating with the other aspects of your business. Mm-hmm. But did you learn a lot from this process?
Tremendously. What it actually gives you, it's not about the money, because it is important, I think, to see that how many people actually think that your project is good, and the fact that people want to help you. I mean, I think that's a wonderful thing. I will be forever grateful for those 31 persons who actually put in the money and, you know, they made it possible. But my opinion is that what crowdfunding actually does, it gives you a huge visibility, because people spread the word, they share it, and, you know, a lot of other people can read about it. They might not have the possibility to support you, but, you know, you are out there.
Yes.
And everybody started to talk about my project, and, you know, articles came out, and, you know, it was a big deal at the time, because, you know, a lot of people said, oh, it's an interesting project.
Yeah.
So I think for the marketing side of it, it gave me a tremendous visibility, which I never had before.
And so not only spreading your word, teaching you a bit more about marketing and and selling and being able to accept people's money.
Oh, absolutely.
that,
yes.
I understand that one.
Yeah.
but also you did raise more than your target was, so you were able to buy, you wanted a particular machine.
Yeah, I still didn't manage to buy the machine, by the way.
Okay.
But I'm working on it. so, but yes, that's the next plan, to put it together. Not everything works as fast as you think it will after the crowdfunding, because, you know, you have to deal with a lot of things. But yes, that will be next step. So I hope that I will be able to produce even more.
So this is a particular type of machine.
Yes.
What does it do that makes it so special?
Well, it is the machine I want to buy. It's actually for leather items.
Okay.
And it's a so-called one-arm machine, meaning that you can turn around the bag around the arm of the machine. You have to have a special skills to work on it. I have the same machine in Budapest, but it's a very old one, and I didn't want to bring it over because I'm not sure about, you know, the shipping, then the
putting. Yeah, so how to react.
Yeah, it's very dear to my heart, and I still want to keep it until I don't know what's the next step. So I'd like to purchase a new one. And yes, you can work on other materials as well, not only leather on this machine, but obviously when you have these very thick fabric from the furniture industry, for instance, you definitely need this machine to be able to work.
And then you're joining those sorts of things together, and you need to then line the bag.
Exactly.
Yes, quite difficult.
Yeah.
And so do you think about potentially outsourcing any of the work? So hiring other people to do it that already have the skills and the machines as well, so you can just concentrate on designing? Or is that something that, no, I want to make them? Is it?
I love collaborations, to be honest. I would love to outsource some of the work, yes. It's very, very difficult to be a one-man band.
Yes.
And what I would love to have to outsource mostly is the marketing and the business part.
But that's actually the easiest part to outsource, is
exactly
when you're creative and you're making something, and it sounds like you might draw something, but it's also an organic design. So as you start making something, it can change what you planned it to be. It can turn into something else as you're going along with the fabric.
Yeah.
And nobody else can do that for you. That's
for sure.
That's your thing.
I love the one-off items, so I think I will forever make them, because it's very dear to my heart and it's very personal, and it has a different touch, I think. So yes, I will do it forever. But it would be nice to find or found a little workshop, so to say, you know, and invite other people to work there, and that would be fantastic in the future.
And what about selling still in Hungary? Do you have a website where you sell?
I do have, but to be honest, it's a bit paused at the moment, because I don't have the energy and the time to focus on two countries at the moment.
Plus you have the part-time job as well to help fund.
Yes, exactly. I had the competition this year from Campari, which was a very important thing for me.
Okay.
Again, it gave me a huge visibility. And because my item won the competition, which was a recycled item, I, you know, really want to keep going on with the artistic part as well. And I actually planning to go do an exhibition very soon.
Fantastic. So how do people get in contact with you if they want to either see your bags or donate some fabrics to you, or you know, chains or zips or whatever else that they might have that you might be able to use? How do people find your work?
I'm on every social media, like Gabe Bags. On Facebook, I think I'm called Gabe Boutique Malta. On Instagram, just Gabe Bags. And then I have a website, gabebags.com.
Okay.
Or by email, gabe@gabebags.com.
Nice and easy.
Yes. Nice and everything easy. Is gabebags.com.
So is it all like clutch bags, handbags? Do you do man bags, or is it all
man adores my bags. I don't have a huge line, to be honest. My website is not updated at the moment because my photographer is in abroad. So we couldn't do the photos on time.
Bring them back.
And that was the motto of the last movie I made, bring him back. So when he's back, we will work on the new items. And yes, I have both. I have unisex, I have men and women. So.
And do you do like travel bags as well, or is it, it's more along the day bag, handbag type things?
Mainly main bag at the moment, but I'm planning to do the bigger travel bags as well.
And what sort of prices do bags start at, just so we can have a guess if it's something that we can ask Santa Claus for this Christmas?
Okay.
I hope my Santa Claus is listening.
Okay, if it's we are talking about the small leather stuff, like small leather goods, it starts on €10 up to 300. And it's the same with the bags. I think the bags starts on from 30 up to 300 again. Okay. So it's not
too scary at all.
It's not like,
for a handmade, unique, bespoke item.
Exactly.
Okay. So you've been listening to Monique Chambers interviewing this week's entrepreneur, which is Gabriela Lukacs from Gabe Bags. Thank you so much. And I wish everyone can go and look at your website now and have a look at your beautiful things.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this week's Interviews with Entrepreneurs with me, Monique Chambers, here on Campus FM. I'd also like to thank Carmela Gregg and Red Ent Abdillah for the production of this show. The show is aired every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and repeated every Friday at 7:30 p.m.